Renna stood with the Haveners when night fell. General Garrett and the Cutters guarded New Risen, where the Eastern Mind Demon had built its ward, and Thamus and the bulk of his wooden soldiers waited by the border of Lackdale to the west. Renna had been given command of New Haven, with Roger and Krasians to bolster the Haveners, who had taken heavy losses the night before.
It's gonna be all right.
How's that?
Either we win and show the world that the demons can't pull us down no matter how hard they try, or we die. And someone writes a song about how we stood strong to the end, so 100 years from now, folk remember and take heart in our bravery.
Rather live.
The great ward was coming to life beneath Renna's feet, a huge pool of strength she did not fully understand.
Bows at the ready!
That's our cue, ladies.
Renna knew the demons were out there, could see their glow shining in the trees, but they seemed unable to approach so long as Roger was playing. A boulder arched high into the air over the trees.
Look out!
Enkidu was already pulling Amanpa out of the way, and Renna grabbed Roger and Sika like children leaping aside. The woods exploded with demons. Field demons came in reaps with flame demons at their heels. Others, their scales a glittering white, followed. Renna had never seen the like, but knew snow demons from Arlen's stories. The Haveners let loose a volley of their precious warded arrows.
Don't shoot, you fools! The Great Ward is still active!
Indeed, the callings came up against the ward and were thrown back with a bright flare of magic. Renna wondered at the point of the charge until a falling stone fell on the head of an archer. Renna looked up and saw a wind demon bank and fly off even as more came, hauling large stones in their hind talons.
Shoot the windies!
Rock and wood!
Renna turned. At the tree line, the huge demons were massing, carrying heavy stones and sections of tree trunk in their talons.
Archers! Target the rock demons! Ignore all else! We will deal with the wood!
Some of the Haveners looked to Renna, and she grit her teeth.
Do as he says!
The Haveners loosed again. As they did, the Sharoom ran forward, coming to a stop right at the edge of the wardnet and using the momentum of their sprints to aid their throws. The light spears flew far, piercing the hearts of wood demons and knocking them down. The Haveners were having less success. Their strongest arrows wasted, the crude ones stuck from the rock demons like pins in a cushion. The demons cocked their arms back, launching their heavy missiles. Everyone scattered, but the defenders were not the demons' targets. One stone struck a wooden fence that formed part of the Great Ward, knocking it to splinters. Another blasted through a section of embankment. Flame demons spat fire on some of the stones, and while the flames winked out when they crossed the wardnet, the rocks remained superheated. One smashed through the doors of a barn, and smoke and flame soon began to stream forth. And still more demons came on. Roger raised his fiddle again, but before he could begin to form a melody, a wood demon threw a log the size of a beer barrel at him and his wives. He managed to roll out of the way, and Amanda and Sikva dropped to the ground. The three of them ran for cover.
They know. Their mans can see through the eyes of their drones.
The thought filled her with anger, and Renna felt the Great Ward respond. She pulled at that strength, feeling it flood her with power. But it was power laced with pain, as if she had been dropped into a cauldron of boiling water. Unable to bear it for long, she drew a heat ward in the air at the offending demons. But then Renna felt her legs give way, barely catching herself with her hands before her face hit the ground.
Is this what Arlen feels? How does he stand it?
She forced herself to her feet, looking at the chaos around her. She knew she had to do something. She reached for her belt, feeling the reassuring grip of her father's knife.
Ain't no easy way to plow a field. Nothing further but to bend your back and get it done.
The magic responded to her resolve, filling her with strength once more as she ran out into the night. Behind her, the Sharoom locked shields and charged out after her. And then Renna was at the first rock demon. She leapt high to plunge her knife into a gap in the armor plates of the demon's neck. Even her father's long blade was not enough to cut the throat of a rock demon, but Renna used the grip to swing herself around behind the behemoth, whipping her brookstone necklace about its throat and pulling tight with all her weight. The warded stones flared to life, pressing inward using the Corling's own strength against it. The head popped free with a flare of magic and a shower of ichor. Renna hit the ground in a crouch. Roja looked on in amazement as she drew a ward in the air. The demons that had tried to kill him exploded into flames and fell to the ground, blackened and smoking. From the look on her face, she was as surprised as he was. Then she leapt and literally ran across the backs of field demons with the grace of a dancing master. A snow demon spat at her, but she dodged aside. The cold spit struck the leg of a rock demon instead. The spot turned white with rime, and she gave it a well-placed kick. The demon's leg shattered. A wood demon hurled a section of trunk at her, clipping her with enough force to throw her several yards before she struck the ground. Renna put her hands under her, struggling to rise, but the opening was all the demons needed. Their teeth and claws found little purchase as her black stem wards flared, but here and there they found gaps and dug in. Kaval and Sharum made a valiant effort to save her, but one of the demons before them reared up, its body elongated to tower over them as it grew a long horned tentacle that it used to slash over the tops of their shields. The demon slashed through them like fruit, killing several of the warriors instantly. The Sharum broke formation and reassembled in a new configuration, surrounding the demon which could only be the mimic Arlen and Leisha spoke of. But the mimic demon was like nothing they had ever faced. It twisted impossibly as they tried to get behind it, and when that was not enough, it grew eyes all around its head and additional tentacles until it faced every warrior at once. Tentacles snatched up fallen warriors by their legs and swung them like clubs to knock others aside. Kaval leapt forward and the demon knocked the shield from his grasp. The drillmaster seemed unfazed, spinning his spear as he parried tentacles, buying his warriors time to strike. But then the demon's maw grew several times its size, and it bit drillmaster Kaval in half. The sight shocked Roja from his daze, and he saw Renna still struggling, caught in the grip of several wood demons attempting to carry her off.
They want her alive!
Roja was dimly aware of Amandva, Sikva, and Enkido following him as he headed for the edge of the wardnet, but he ignored them, ignored everything but the music as he stepped out into the naked night, and the music spoke to them.
Freeze! Prey approaches! Be ready to pounce!
They did, talons tearing at the soil as they tamped down powerful limbs, preparing to spring. Even the demons trying to steal away with Renna stopped in their tracks, as he had intended. Only the mimic demon was unaffected, leaping out from the ring of Sharum and charging at Roja like a nightmare come to life. He allowed himself to smile and fill the night with pain. Even the mimic felt it, pulling up short. Lesser demons fled the sound, but Roja circled the mimic, building on its pain. The demon writhed in pain, tentacles pressing against its head as it melted and shifted. The shifts became erratic, the mimic's flesh bubbling and sloughing off into a growing puddle of goo at its feet.
Got you now, you son of the Gore!
Roja's smile was grim as he pressed in for the kill. It looked at him with what almost seemed a smile as its ears melted away entirely, leaving only smooth scales along its skull. Roja had no time to dodge as it swept a tentacle at him. Enkido hurled himself between them, taking the blow meant for him. The eunuch was disemboweled, but he managed to throw his spear. It struck the demon, flaring brightly with magic. But Roja knew it would not be enough to kill the beast, and his music now held no power over it. The mimic reared again, and Roja's bow slipped from the strings as he dove into a roll. The demon drew back to swing at him again, and Roja flinched, knowing he could not dodge aside in time. The appendage whipped forward. but instead of the sharp horns along its length, Roger was struck by a spray of ichor from the severed limb. He looked and saw Renner standing there, ichor-stained knife in hand. The demon turned to meet her charge, but this time Amanva stepped forward, reaching into the horror pouch at her waist. She pulled forth a blackened lump of demon bone, pointing it at the mimic as her fingers manipulated the wards carved into its surface. A blast of magic leapt from the bone like lightning, striking the mimic and lifting it clear off the ground. Renner was on it in an instant, stabbing and cutting. Amanva swept the dust of the crumbling bone from her hands and reached into her pouch again, pulling forth a handful of demon talons. She threw these, and they shot forth like crankbow bolts, lodging deep in the mimic's body. It twisted, unfocused, as Renner threw it to the ground, sawing at its neck. The remaining Sharoom, led by Kaliv, joined the fray, stabbing, blocking flailing tentacles with their shields as they kept the creature from gathering its wits once more. Out of the corner of his warded eyes, Roger saw the bright glow of demons no longer held back by his music, beginning to return. He put his fiddle back to work, trying to drive them away, but a field demon had caught sight of Sikha, who knelt over the still body of Enkidu, weeping. It launched itself at her, and Roger knew he could not turn it in time. But Sikva saw the calling coming. Her thin veil was soaked with tears, and she tore it away with one hand as she touched the choker at her throat with the other. Human and demon alike were forced to cover their ears. The field demon stumbled mid-lope, tumbling end over end to lie dead at her feet.
Back to the ward net! I'll hold them back!
As they ran back to safety, Roger breathed a moment's relief until he saw the rockets leaving red streaks across the night sky, signaling that demons had breached the wards and were on the streets of New Risen. 333 AR, Autumn, third night of New Moon.
They come!
An acrobat himself, Roger knew a thing or two about balance, but even he was amazed at the ease with which Kaliv, the Krivak Watcher, had planted his 12-foot-tall ladder on open ground and run straight up to the top rung without using his hands. The two men were alone in the town square of New Risen, amid the ruins that only a day ago had been a thriving town. They had spent the day piling wreckage to restore the Great Ward, but none had any illusions it would hold. And so they waited, jongler and watcher, in the small, portable circle Roger had used all his life. Roger lifted his fiddle as the sounds of the demons reached his ears. They would need to come through New Risen to strike at Cutter's Hollow, and with most of the town destroyed, the easiest path was through the town square. The music spoke to them.
Come this way. It is quicker. It is easier. There is prey.
And indeed there was. Him. The demons responded, dozens at first, striking at his wards with flashes of magic. The number quickly swelled to hundreds, then thousands. They filled the square, and still his call went out, drawing them to him. Soon he and Kaliv were lost in a sea of teeth and scales, unable to see anything else. But the worn, portable circle had been well made, and it turned their attacks back on them, the field only growing stronger as more and more of them fed it with their magic. But then, the inevitable happened. The swirling mass of Corlings parted to allow wood demons to advance. These carrying giant clubs made from the trunks of trees. Kaliv was ready, producing a twisted ram's horn, hollowed and polished. Shutters slammed open around the square, arches appearing in the windows and atop the roofs of the ruined buildings. Demons charged the doorways to the buildings, but they were doused in spray pumped from barrels on the floors above. A moment later, torches followed.
Now!
Khalil set his ladder and climbed up quickly, taking a weighted line and throwing it to a third-floor window. Roger shoved his fiddle into the bag of marbles slung over his shoulder. He ran up the ladder almost as nimbly as Khalil, grabbing onto the watcher as he leapt. Men in the window pulled at the line as they tucked their legs and swung. They slammed into the blackened wall of the building. Khalil was already climbing to the window, hauling Roger, who clung to his shoulders. They escaped just in time as Count Thamus and Garrett led a charge of heavy horse into the press. Roger looked sadly at the spot where they had once stood, now trampled by hundreds of steel-shod hooves.
Gonna miss that circle.
Renna paced back and forth, hating that she was forced to wait while battle was met. But as they had with Arlen, the demons knew her on sight now and abandoned all other pursuits when she was beyond the wards. The Hollowers were in full rout when they returned, running hard before a swarm of Khorlings. Thamus' cavalry gave cover to the footmen, but the horsemen too were fleeing, their spears mostly gone as they laid about with warded axe and hammer. Khalil had Roger slung over his shoulder as he ran. They flowed around Renna as she stood alone at the border and felt the magic pooled at her feet. When they were clear, she drew. Ignoring the lesser demons, Renna focused on the rocks, drawing heat and impact wards. She lasted longer tonight, but quickly reached her limit, feeling dizzy as the magic burned at her from the inside. She fell to one knee, bracing herself with a hand on the cobbles, and drew again. Leisha could feel her muscles knotting tighter the closer the sounds of battle came to the hospit of Cutter's Hollow. For now, the Great Ward was secure. It was unlikely the demons could destroy it all in a night.
But they don't need to. They just need to do more damage than we can repair in a month. Then as soon as the moon wanes again, they'll come finish the job.
Outside, boulders fell like rain. Leisha looked around the main hall, beds and the floor between filled with the wounded, white bandages and red splotches everywhere. The most stable had been sent to the Holy House in Tender Hay's care, but the hospit was still at capacity. Leisha caught Amanva's eye, and the young Damating nodded. Leisha knew she was no happier to be trapped inside, but her fighting horror had been depleted battling the mimic, and she and Sipa were needed here.
Help!
Khalil came bursting in. Leisha could see at a glance from the colored silk that he was carrying Roger. The jongler's carrot hair was matted red with blood. Leisha ran to him, but Amanva got there first, cradling his head to inspect the damage as Khalil lay him down. Sikva moved to bar the way.
I don't have time for this demon shit, Sikva.
Leisha moved to shove the younger woman aside, but Sikva was faster, grabbing her arm and twisting it.
See to the others. We will tend our husband.
Just then, the rest of the wounded reached the hospital, and it was all she and the other women could do to find space for them in triage. The sounds of battle drew too close for comfort as they worked. The demons were at the border, which meant Renna Tanner was their last real line of defense. Leisha knew the woman would do her best, but it wasn't yet midnight. Could she hold back the entire corps until dawn? Apparently not.
Someone close the door!
Creator, I know you aid those who aid themselves, but we could really use a miracle.
She didn't expect an answer, but it came a moment later. As the entire building seemed to rock from side to side, ceiling beams fell into the floor amid a cloud of dust and rubble.
Arlen!
His room was on the second floor. She put a cloth over her mouth and ran to the steps. Leisha quickly made her way to the second floor. The second floor was partially collapsed. A boulder had apparently passed clear through, shearing off part of the roof and taking out several walls. Leisha picked her way over the wreckage to the small private room where Arlen lay unconscious. Her worst fears were realized as she moved through the hole where the door had been. Part of the ceiling was open to the night sky, and the space where the bed had been was a mass of rubble from a collapsed wall. Leisha backed away from the sight until she struck one of the remaining walls. She slid down to the floor, shaking.
It's over. We're all going to die.
But then, the rubble shifted and began to rise. The beams lifted out of the mass and stones fell away. Arlen Bales was in the center, his wards glowing brightly as he worked his hands under the beams across his knotted shoulders. Isha stared at him as he approached.
What's happened? Last I remember, I was destroying the demons' ammunition piles.
That was 2 days ago. New Rizon is gone. The demons are at the edge of the Corlins' graveyard. Rena is holding them back.
Rena's out there alone?
And just like that, he collapsed into smoke. Leisha left holding empty air. Arlen materialized in the Corlins' graveyard an instant later, immediately spotting Rena on her elbows and knees. But Arlen could see she would not be able to rise again. Her aura was flickering. She was seconds from passing out. He was at her side immediately, not bothering to draw wards as he laid a hand on her shoulder. He reached through her into the great ward, feeling its power. He drew, pulling magic through Rena steadily until her aura was restored and the black stem wards on her skin began to glow of their own accord.
Arlen!
She rose to her feet and threw her arms around him.
Promised I'd die before I let the demons take the Hollow Wren. You mean it when you said the same?
Every word.
Arlen took her hand in a firm grip.
Then draw with me.
The two of them pulled at the great ward, flooding themselves with power.
Shields open!
The wooden soldiers broke apart, giving them a clear view of the enemy. As one, they raised their hands to trace wards in the air. The dawn came, and the sounds of crashing boulders, exploding flamework, and screams of pain fell away. Leisha looked around at the shrouded bodies lying all over the Corlings' graveyard. The battle hadn't ended when Arlen and Rena collapsed. Reinforcements had come from the other burrows when it was clear the demons were making a full press for the center of the hollow, and battle had been joined directly. There were so many wounded, she had been forced to begin laying them out in the square, and then on the streets. She looked sadly at the holy house where they had made their last stand in the Battle of Cutter's Hollow, its roof now caved by several boulder strikes. New Rizon had been nearly leveled, as well as the now ironically named Sweet Sucker, but the defenses had held in the other burrows. Leisha entered her office in the hospice to check on Roger. He lay propped up on her desk, his head wrapped in bandages. Amanva and Sikva had been taking turns talking to him and asking questions, trying to keep him awake and alert.
How is he?
Oh, he will recover. The dice tell me Evram still has need for him.
He needs us all.
My people think the Chin weak, but my father spoke of the Hollow Tribe's strength. In this, as in all things, he was right. Your people have honored the Creator this waning. You will rise stronger than ever.
We can't keep taking losses like this. We'll need to deepen and strengthen our great wards and get people off the streets on waning. Dig basements, tunnels, sewers.
You must build an undercity.
Good start, but it won't be enough.
Arlen, thank the Creator you're all right. We won't survive another new moon without you.
They have to. I'm why the mines have come. It's all my fault.
That's not...
Demons were in my head, Leisha. Heard their plans, and worse, they've heard mine. Know everything I do, including my plans for Jardir and for taking the offensive against him. Everything I've been devising made worthless in an instant. Need to do something they won't expect.
333 AR, summer. 14 dawns before waning.
How dare you spin your lies in the court of the Deliverer!
Damaji Kazan of the Jama tribe pointed his finger at Damaji Ikak of the Khan Jin.
Lies! You are the one whose tongue drips with false witness!
Ikak and Kazan, neither the fittest to begin with, had put on even more weight in recent months. Virtually every Krasian had since they conquered the abundant Greenlands, but few so grossly. Aman Asu Hosh Kamin, Amjadir Amkaji, Shah Damakar, and the most powerful man in the world, looked at the squabbling clerics and had to suppress the urge to blood his spear with the both of them. The Jama and Kajin were ever at each other's throats.
Jayan, my son, what think you of this great crisis between the Jama and Kajin?
The Jama have a legitimate claim to injury, father, but so too do the Kajin.
And how would you deal with it in my place?
Both tribes have proven they are unworthy of the land. I would confiscate it for the war effort.
Of course you would. The only one of my sons to have his own palace, and already it must be grander than any other.
Jadir looked to Asom, standing behind Damaji Ashan and Dama Asu Kaji.
And you, Asom, do you agree with your brother?
The land is meaningless, father, and will not solve the true problem.
And what is that, my son?
The Sharaka is nigh, yet the Damaji continue to waste deliverers' time with petty matters even children could settle among themselves.
Silence!
And your solution to this problem?
Let the Damaji settle it among themselves, and give Damaji's Kazan and Ikak 3 lashes of the Alagai tail each for incentive.
How dare you, boy!
Outrageous!
You see, Damaji, already you agree on something.
Kazan's and Ikak's faces grew so red Jardia thought they might burst.
Careful, my son. You make powerful enemies.
Once again, my brother proves why he is heir to nothing.
Asom did not flinch, his gaze cool. He did not have the look of an heir to nothing.
He has the look of an Andra, as if his appointment is a foregone conclusion.
Jardia considered. Asom had masterfully cornered him. If he followed Jayan's solution, his second son would lose face, and indeed, the true problem would continue. But if he agreed...
The Damaja!
All the men looked up, their conflict momentarily forgotten at the sight of Inevera.
She does take the breath away.
Inevera made no effort to approach the throne. She caught Shardir's eye and touched her Hora pouch, then inclined her head slightly toward her pillow chamber.
It shall be as both my sons suggest. The contested lands will go to Jayan, and Damaji's Ikak and Kizan will have the kiss of the Alagai tail. Damaji Eleverak will administer the punishments here and now. Sharak Ka is upon us, Damaji. We have no more time to fight among ourselves. From now on, these matters will be handled within your closed council. Waste my time like this again, and the next whippings will be in the city square for all to see.
Faces blanched as Jardir descended the 7 steps from his dais and strode past them, following Inevera. Jardir watched the sway of Inevera's hips as she strode into her pillow chamber, mesmerized as always by her beauty. But only a fool would think her value lay in her beauty. Would he be where he was today without Inevera? Would he have seized power when the opportunity came to him? Would it even have come? Or would he be just another illiterate Dal Sharum? Or worse, a bleached skull in Sharak Hora?
And I love her still.
Not bothering to light a lamp, Inevera moved to close the thick curtains that hung beside the room's great windows. As she shrouded them in darkness, Jardia's senses came alive. The crown of Kaji had always conveyed ward sight, much as the coins on Inevera's brow. But ever since the fight with a mind demon, when the greater powers of his crown came alive, he had begun to see more. Auras surrounding people that told him their feelings and gave him insight into their motives. Suddenly, the infinite wisdom of Kaji began to make sense. With a crown sight to see the hearts of his people, Jardir could be a greater leader by far. Inevera moved to her favored casting pillow, and Jardir moved to take the one facing, as was his habit. Inevera drew the curved blade that had cut him countless times over the years.
What shall I ask first?
Jardir rolled his sleeve and held out his arm. She pressed the sharp point into a vein and tipped a small bowl to catch the flow. When it was full, she pressed her thumb against the vein and reached for her herb pouch.
There is no need.
Jardir pulled a touch of power from the spear resting beside him. He lifted his arm from her grasp, showing that the blood flow had ceased and the wound closed. Inevra eyed the healing in surprise.
Let us begin with Aban's plan to assault Docktown on first snow. Those plans must be set in motion soon if we are to have the advantage of surprise.
Inevra studied the pattern. Jardir studied her in turn, searching her aura for hints of truth behind her coming words. She was not pleased with the results. This much was clear.
You cannot go back, and you cannot afford to stand still. The only way is forward. The Kafit's plan will spare many lives.
More to stand in Sharaka.
Or oppose you later.
That is a risk I must take. What else do the dice say? Tell me everything for once, and spare me the dissembling.
Doom befall the armies of the Deliverer. If they should march north with enemies unconquered at their back, you cannot take your forces to the Hollow without first taking Lacton, nor Angiers without the Hollow beside you.
Of that, at least, I am unconcerned. The Hollow tribe will follow me when called.
You will not have the loyalty of the Hollow until you kill the Warded Man, the one they call Deliverer.
Is there anything else?
You must lead your armies if they are to achieve victory in the Daylight War. But do not leave the Skull Throne vacant too long. You have 52 sons, and they will all eye it hungrily.
Are any of my sons worthy to sit in my absence, and willing to stand back up upon my return?
Inevra cut her own hand, dripping her own blood on the dice in addition to Jardir's.
No.
No? Just no?
It is not as I would have it either, husband. But the dice are clear. I have cast the dice for thousands of men and never found another with your potential.
How can I throw back my enemies in the coming waning?
Inevra saw something that made her aura become one of sharp concentration, crawling on her knees to study the pattern from all sides. She was seeing something she did not wish to tell, and was searching for a way out of it.
The Deliverer must go into the night alone to hunt the center of the web, or all will be lost when Alagai Ka and his princelings come. But even if you survive, there will be a heavy price.
Princelings? How many? What web?
7 will rise, one for each layer of Ni's Abyss, but only 3 will strike at Evaram's bounty.
Only, you say? Evaram's beard. One nearly proved our undoing.
No, you were not prepared then.
It infiltrated the palace, Inevra. Slipped past the work of our finest warders like it was nothing.
We have added protection since. The Alagai princes will not penetrate our warding so easily now. And I will cast the dice to find the weakest points of our net and bolster them.
And this web?
Of that I can tell you nothing.
No attempts to dissuade me from this course?
It is Inevra. Sharaka is yours to win, husband.
Or lose. Where will the demons strike hardest? Where should I position my forces?
Inevra stared for a long time at the result.
I do not know. There are too many variables. I will try again in the coming days.
Every day. 100 times if you must. Nothing is more important.
Inevra bowed slightly, lifting the dice one last time.
We will cast now for the coming day. Evaram, giver of light and life, I beseech you. Give this lowly servant knowledge of what is to come. Tell me of Amon, son of Hosh Gamin, last scion of the line of Jardir, the 7th son of Kaji. You will give the Damating a powerful gift today.
Kind of me.
You will gain warriors tonight, but lose others on the morrow.
Gain at night? Lose during the day? How is this possible?
I do not know.
Jardir could see in her aura that her words were only half true, and had to suppress a flash of anger.
What secrets is she hiding?
Not long after sunrise tomorrow, an unexpected messenger will bring you ill tidings.
That happens every day.
This one has passed through death to see his missive delivered. His message will bring you pain.
He saw no deception in her, but as she spoke the words, her aura pulsed. There was nothing in her expression, no outward sign, but to his eyes, it was plain as day. empathy. Without even knowing the cause, her heart had cried out for him when she realized he would be hurt. His pain was her pain. He reached out to her, his anger gone, and gently touched her face. She looked at him, and her aura had never shone so bright. Whatever else she might feel, wherever her loyalties might lie, she loved him.
Oh, my Shiwaka, how I have wronged you.
Jardir sat on his skull throne, his warded cloak thrown back. He waited for Anevra to join him on the dais, then clapped his hands. A Sikh appeared at the door, bowing deeply.
Show Abin in!
A Sikh nodded, and a moment later the fat Kafit appeared at the door, bowing as low as his crutch would allow.
Abin, my friend!
Jardir beckoned the Kafit. Anevra shifted beside him, and he did not need to see her aura to know what she was feeling. He had seen Abin's aura, and he knew the Kafit harbored similar feelings toward his first wife. Abin stopped at the base of the dais, but Jardir waved him still closer.
You may climb 3 steps, one for each of your legs.
My wives would tell you that meant I could take a 4th step as well.
I remember you in your Bido, and think your wives flatter you. But the sound of the Damaja's laughter pleases me. You may take the 4th step.
Abin ascended quickly, not questioning his fortune.
We have consulted on your plan and find it sound. We will attack Docktown on 1st snow. Begin the preparations, but say nothing to anyone.
The longer the secret is kept, the less chance the Lactonians will have to flee. If I had my way, even your generals would know nothing until the time came to signal the attack.
It is sound advice.
But that is not why you come to me today, Abin. I did not summon you. What draws you from the center of your web?
My people have made a delicate discovery.
For an instant, Abin's eyes flicked to Anevra.
Speak.
Abin bowed again, reaching into a pocket in the fine tan vest he wore over his colorful silk shirt. He withdrew the hand, holding out a lump of silvery metal. Anevra stiffened. Jardir was out of the throne in an instant, snatching it from the Kafit's hand. He hadn't held it a moment before Anevra snatched it in turn, holding it to the light, this way and that.
This is the same metal as the spear and crown of Kaji.
Yes. Our metallurgists have long sought to unlock the secrets of the artifacts of the first deliverer. Too pale to be gold, but neither were they silver or platinum. Our best guess had been white gold, an alloy made by adding nickel to pure gold. Jewelers in the bazaar have been using it for centuries. Cheaper than gold, it sells for nearly twice the price to fools who think it is exotic. This is electrum.
Electrum?
A natural alloy of silver and gold, I am told.
Told by whom?
Abin turned, clapping loudly as Jardir himself had done before. Immediately, Hasik appeared at the door.
Show in our guest!
Hasik glared at him, but Jardir did not countermand the order. He escorted a Rizinan man into the room. The man was old, squinting in the light, his face and hands smudged with dirt. He held a hat in his hands.
Renik, master of one of Shardamaka's gold mines.
Hasik grabbed the man roughly, forcing him to his knees and pressing his forehead to the floor.
Enough! Hasik, leave us!
The warrior pursed his lips, but bowed.
Master Renik, tell us what you know of this metal.
Renik wrung the hat in his hands like a laundress.
It's like I said to Abin, your grace. That there is electrum. Seen it once before when I was a boy working another mine down south. The signs are in the rock. Vein of silver ran into the gold. It don't happen often and there ain't much of it.
Can you make more of it?
Reckon so, though maybe not as pure. But why? It might fetch a fair price as novelty, but it ain't worth as much as pure gold.
I see! Remove this man! Make sure that man does not speak to anyone.
Already done. He will be taken right to the forges, where my private smiths work, and never seen again. His family will be told he was killed in a cave-in and compensated handsomely.
I must take it to my chamber and confirm its power.
We will wait for you. I am not a fool, wife. I see how you and Abin look at each other, circling my throne and marking it with your piss. But I have chosen to trust the two of you, and in this, at least, you must trust each other.
Inevra drew in her brows, but she nodded, disappearing into her chamber and returning several minutes later.
What is more precious than gold?
Jardir looked to Abin, and both men shrugged.
It is an ancient question of the Damating, seeking the Damaj's sacred metal. Precious metals conduct magic better than base ones, but even gold cannot transfer without loss. At long last, we have found the answer.
Jardir took the lump, studying it. He lifted it and put his teeth to it, seeing the imprint they left.
But the crown and spear are harder than the finest steel. No hammer or forge can even scratch them. This metal is soft. It will not even hold an edge.
Not now, perhaps. But when charged with magic, it will be indestructible.
The thought of making more weapons as powerful as his spear was intoxicating. Suddenly winning Shurak Kaz seemed within his grasp.
Imagine the power my warriors will have.
1,000 apologies, Deliverer. But do not put the cart before the camel. As Renick said, there is but a small vein of this stuff.
How small? I will know if you lie to me, Abin.
30 pounds, perhaps 50. Not enough to arm even the spears of the Deliverer. And, I might add, you might think twice about arming any warrior with such a potent weapon, lest he begin to have delusions of grandeur. It's been known to happen.
I agree with the Kafit.
Twice in one day? Evaram's wonders never cease.
Do not grow accustomed to it. But in this case, your weaponsmiths are not the ones best suited to make use of this discovery.
Jardir looked at her a long time, remembering her words in the pillow chamber.
You will give the Damating a powerful gift today.
So be it.
Safe in her chamber of shadows, Inevra stared at the lump of electrum in her left hand while slowly rolling her Alagai Hora in her right. She marveled as thin tendrils of ambient magic wafted toward the electrum and were absorbed, the way a slight draft might pull at smoke. Even without wards, the metal drew, glowing dully in the ward light. Damating frequently made jewelry with demon bone cores, but it was forbidden to coat the dice, for the transfer with other precious metals was imperfect and had been proven to affect foretelling. She looked at her precious dice restored at last and smiled. She was already preparing to carve another set as a safeguard, but now she need never fear exposing them to the sun again. Already, she was pondering other applications. She might gift electrum-coated Hora to her most trusted followers, but she would need to prepare it all herself. She looked around the chamber, considering how best to vent a forge so deep underground without sacrificing the security of her private vault.
But for all the precautions I take, the secret of the metal is already in the hands of the one I trust least.
She kept her center, but the wind was strong. At last, she cleared her mind and put the metal away. She had a plan. She would entrust 3 certain eunuch watchers with a task. They were Enkidu's finest protégés, men who did not exist, trained to walk unseen even in a crowded day, to stand motionless for hours, to climb sheer walls and to kill quickly and silently. Tongueless, they could not speak, but they knew well how to listen. She would have them follow the Shah Damakaz Kafit, track his every movement, and report to her everyone he spoke with, everywhere he went. They would infiltrate the fortress he was building and take stock of the secrets within. Satisfied, she cast her bones once more, hoping to glean a few last clues of the night to come. Even after months, Jardir still marveled at the lightness of his fighting robes as Inevra helped him prepare for the night's Alagai Shurak. No longer thick material housing metal plates, he now wore thin silk that could be quickly cast aside to bring his skin, scarred into fighting and protective wards, to bear. He was now safer naked than in the strongest armor.
I will join you as you walk the naked night.
I do not think that is wise, beloved. Alagai Shurak is no—
You will walk the night with Lisha Paper, but not your Jiwaka? I battled at your side against an Alagai prince and his bodyguard.
Her scowl softened immediately, and Anevera pressed in so close he could feel the warmth and softness of her skin through his silk robes.
What need I fear of common demons when I walk at the side of Shardamaka?
Even common demons must be respected. Forget that for an instant, and even the Damaja can be killed. Chosen of Evaram or not, we are but flesh and blood.
I will not forget, beloved. But do not forget that as you have your protections, I have my own.
Of that, I have no doubt.
Inevra and Jardir left the palace together, she resting in a palanquin atop a camel and he on his white charger. They were followed by the amazed stares of everyone they passed, but none dared speak a word of protest. Jayan was at the training grounds when they arrived. His white turban singled him out from a distance, surrounded by his white-veiled Kai Sharum. Asum was with him, leading the men in prayer to Almighty Evaram before the sun set and Ni's abyss opened. Despite their rivalry, Jardir could not deny his pleasure at seeing his eldest son standing together, leading his forces. Jayan had bowed deeply, but his disapproval was clear as he eyed his mother. Outside, after the Dama had sung the curfew, Asom likely shared his opinion, but the younger man's face was blank, revealing nothing. Inevra had taken in the assembled warriors and suggested they tour the defenses, with their sons leading an honor guard. Jardir had found the request curious, but at last shrugged. The units had broken out of the training grounds on their way to their posts. Asom rode a white charger like the one his father rode, save for a black diamond at its forehead. Jayan had mounted a black charger with white fetlocks and muzzle. As they had conducted the tour, Jardir lamented, not for the first time, how woefully insecure the Greenland City was. Yet for all its weaknesses, the outer city was surprisingly defensible. A single thrown boulder could take out a ward pillar, but the gap would soon be closed by another, each able to work independent of the others. Darkness fell as they rode, and with it came the welcome glow of crown sight. Jardir had felt his senses sharpen even further as his powers came to life, picking out the clash of spears and shields as the Sharum made their ambushes. Occasionally, they had come upon groups of Sharum engaged in fighting, but in most cases, it was firmly under control, with seasoned warriors using the sparse demons as living lessons to the less experienced. From atop the hill, they had seen a reap of field demons in the valley below, circling a pair of slender Dal Sharum standing back to back. The warriors seemed unharmed, but they were outnumbered more than 3-1, and thus unlikely to remain so. Jardir tensed, ready to gallop to their aid, when Inevra raised a hand.
Just watch, beloved. We are not meant to interfere.
Who are they? What unit are they from? This pocket isn't due to be swept for another hour.
Just then, the largest of the field demons broke the circling ring to leap at one of the warriors, who seemed to have dropped his guard. It was a lure, and the warrior whirled the moment the attack came, driving his spear right down its throat. Another demon leapt at the opening, but the warrior's partner had his shield in place to block. He struck a blow of his own hard on the foreleg joint that sent the demon skittering back. So impressed was Jardir with the warrior's skill, it took him a moment to realize there had been no flare of magic when the warrior struck.
Their spears are not warded?
They fight in the old way, as did my honored husband.
Without combat magic, the Sharum blows had to be precise, for the demon's armor had few weaknesses, and they healed quickly. But the warriors fought like nothing Jardir had ever seen, working in perfect unison, like a single fighter with two heads and four arms. They stepped together hard, the defensive wards on their shields flaring and crushing a demon that had come between them. Soon the warriors grew more bold, stepping apart and letting the demons surround them.
Fools! Why give up the advantage?
But the warriors had given up nothing. The demons came at them from all sides, but they used their shields to maximum effect, whipping their spears to parry and harry as they moved, every step in control. A demon charged one headlong while his shield and spear were out wide, but the warrior leaned forward and kicked his foot up behind him like a scorpion to strike over his head. The demon fell, and before it could recover, he was on its fellow, striking a precise blow down its throat for another kill. Soon four demons were dispatched, and fighting one-to-one, they dropped their shields, foregoing defense entirely. The demons were no match for them. The warriors stood regarding the Alagai corpses around them. Inevra kicked her camel and headed down the hill toward them. Jardir and the others followed, awestruck. When they closed in, the warriors bowed deeply, first to Inevra and then to Jardir. When they straightened, Jardir's eyes bulged from his head. Their warriors' garb hid much, but their auras could not hide the curves of their bodies.
Women!
Shardamaka, we come before you to answer your call. We pray these Alagai are a worthy sacrifice for the first of your Sharum Ting.
Sharum Ting?
In response, the women reached up, removing their turbans and veils with the same synchronous precision with which they fought. Jardir held his breath, having already identified them by their auras. Inevra was clever. He could not deny it. But she had struck a hornet's nest this time.
What in knees, Abyss?
Shanjat's eyes widened.
Shanva?
He saw his daughter, Jardir's niece, by his sister Hoshva, standing before them. But it was the other woman that caused Asom's aura to flare so bright with rage that Jardir felt blinded by it even in periphery. It was Ashia, Ashan's daughter by his eldest sister, Imisandra. Asom's first wife.